honorable members, and welcome to this first meeting of the Portfolio Committee in this calendar year. And then welcome members of the Department and the Defense Force in this meeting. We are going to have to end this meeting by 12:30 because this venue is booked already for another meeting. But even if it was not booked, in terms of our agenda, we'll still finish before that. Thank you very much. We have the agenda. There is the agenda we have. The Department of Defense implementation of the recommendation contained in the 2016 Defense and Military Budget Review recommendation. That will be the first one. And then we'll have a discussion. And then there will be a brief on the progress making the repair and maintenance of one new hospital. Discussion, committee business, adoption of minutes, committee study toward Cuba, Armed Forces Day, and it will be closing. In terms we have forgotten each other, my name is Malusi Sende Mutimele, the chairperson of this portfolio committee. In that order, Comrade Dambuza. Your name. Can you introduce yourself?
Morning, Chairperson and members. My name is Nomsa Dambuza.
Morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable members. My name is JJ Skosam. Thanks.
Morning, Chair and members, and members of the department. Advocate Thomas Bongani Bongo. Thank you.
Morning, Chairperson. Morning, members. My name is Nyamezi Zikwe.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members. My name is Kovas Murray, member of the committee.
Thank you, Chair. Tumisani Kamete, member of the committee.
We're done, honorable members. General, we know who you are.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and members of the Portfolio Committee on Defense. I'm Lieutenant General Bosumuzi Masonga, the Chief of Staff of the SA India, and I'm accompanied by Major General Ramatwana, if you can indicate this, who is the Chief Planner in the SA India, and Major General Ledwaba, in charge of our works regiment, and Major General Sichongai from HR, Brigadier General Wood from the South African Military Health Services, Colonel van der Merwe from the works regiment, Colonel Mposulwa, also from the Works Regiment, and Colonel Nambasia from the Works Regiment, and of course, CO Rampel from my office. I think Mr. Marim is known to the committee. Mr. Marim.
Let's get straight to our business of today. I'm not sure who's making a presentation. You might may have organized yourself accordingly. Let's get straight to the first item.
Sorry, Honorable Chairperson, just to introduce myself as well, I'm Solichiani from Polita General, just to note.
Thank you very much, Auditor General. And the Honorable Member that just came in a black hat is the Honorable Isau, member of this committee. Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you very much, the Chair and members of the committee. As per program, we'll be making two presentations. The first one will be on the budgetary review recommendations report, and that presentation will be made by Major General Ramatswana. In this regard, I want to tender an apology to the committee chair that these questions, we actually received them late as a department. Actually, we received them in January. And in fact, when we went through the document, we realized that some of these you expected us to respond to sometime last year. So we apologize for that. But in our presentation, we have also covered some of the questions that are still in the future, in terms of the timelines that have been set for us to provide responses. And I also need to indicate, Honorable Chair and members, that the presentation that will be made will differ slightly from that one that will be distributed. Because we have had to work through the final documents for the purposes of making sure that everything covered there is correct. But also when we then discuss that document with the Chief of the National Defense Force, there are certain areas where the issues are of an operational nature. So although the responses have been provided in the presentation that were distributed earlier, but we request that we shouldn't be discussing the detail of that during this deliberation. And the second presentation on the progress made with the repair and maintenance of one military hospital will be made by Major General Lidwaba. And of course, as the program details, after the first presentation, we'll entertain questions and further discussion, if there's any, the same with the second presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Lieutenant General. So, Major General, how much time? How long is your presentation going to take?
Chairperson, I think I'll take about 20 minutes. It won't be more.
Thank you very much. Then let's start, Major General.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members, thanks for the opportunity. I'll go straight to the presentation itself, of which the first issue we are going to address is the one that is related to the military judges and the backlog of cases. Progress in this regard is that there has been, we have vetted the judges, 18 of them have been vetted, and we still have five of our judges that await the completion of the DI vetting. But of importance is the backlog in terms of cases. When we started off, when we started with the financial year 16-17, The opening balance with regards to the backlog of cases was 2,396, and we have managed to deal with 957 of the cases that we had. And therefore, we now have the number that is outstanding is 1,439. I think these backlog cases we will continue to address. And of importance is the fact that we always proceed with backlog cases, and the reason for that being that each and every financial year when you start and you do not finish a case, it falls in the category of backlog cases. But with what has been done so far, we have reduced 957 out of the opening balance of 2,396, which we had at the beginning of 2016-2017. Now, moving forward, Chairperson, it was matters with regards to litigation and contingent liabilities. Civil claims that we had amounts to 859 million of that, and the cases, the litigation against the department, we received 96 of the cases and we finalized 31. Now, out of the 31 cases which were finalized, we have settled in favor of the Department of Defense 26 cases, and we have lost 5 cases in this regard. Now, from the 26, from the 31 that we finalized, we are of the point of view that the 26 that were finalized was our legal division has made a lot of effort for them to make sure that we've settled them in our favor, although we do take note of the fact that we've got 5 of those that we have lost, which didn't work in our favor. Chairperson, the in terms of when we started off the financial year 16-17, the opening balance in terms of the civil claim was 804 million. And as of the 31st of December, we had 859.4 million of that. In terms of the mobile assets, the opening balance was 12.1 million, and the closing balance thereof was 12,048,000. Therefore, Chairperson, we do take note of the fact that we are, when we opened the entire balance, it was 816, but with the closing balance, as of the 31st of December, we are 871 in this regard. The challenge of the department is that these are matters that are not very easy to control. These are the matters that, of course, what is within our mandate is that of defending the department in terms of rules and regulations and policies when these court actions are being taken. The next issue, Chairperson, is the one that's in relation with the Military Discipline Bill. The Military Discipline Bill was certified. It has received the pre-certification on the 6th of May, 2016. And we have taken the Military Discipline Bill to the JCPS cluster and the Development Committee on the 16th of May and the 7th of June, respectively. We were directed there to do further consultations in the JCPS cluster. And these are the consultations which are being done at this stage. There is what we call the SEAS, that's the Strategic Environmental Impact Assessment System, which the cluster is directed that this bill must still undergo that process. And taking that into consideration, therefore, while it is undergoing that process, we foresee that we will be able to submit the CAB memo in June 2018, in the 29th of June 2018, and we will be able to take the bill to the Legislation and Proceeding Unit in Parliament by the 18th of October 2018. Chairperson, this is not what we would have, it's not the status that we would have liked to have. However, this is given the legislative process that we have, the department now it has to follow. So that is why the timelines are in the way that they have been put in the slide. Of course, we do mention that the dates are subject to variables within the legislative process that may affect the proposed submission date. Chairperson, the next issue, the next subject of discussion is the one that relates to the 20 investigations within the supply chain environment, procurement and contracting investigations that are currently ongoing. We want to mention, Chairperson, that we have had two cases which they were found that there was no evidence in this regard of these two cases, and as a result, the two cases have been cancelled. But the other 18 cases, they are going on. They are continuing. They are under investigation. Just to give you an indication, Chairperson, that is that we have some cases with the specialized commercial crimes unit. We have some with the Public Service Commission. We also have within the Department of Defense, the military police are investigating 10 of these cases. And then we also have some that are being dealt with by the Inspector General. And those that are being dealt by the Inspector General, we've got in the region of about 6 of those cases. Now, this gives us a total of the cases of about 18. Now, Chairperson, it is difficult in this case to give an indication in terms of the timelines to say when will this be concluded, because there is also a case that is residing with the NPA. Now, that is difficult to say that when will this be concluded as with the investigation, but I think it is what we can say is that we will keep on updating the committee in terms of the progress with regards to these cases. The next one, Chairperson, was in relation to procurement policy and the 90-day turnaround time. What has happened here is that we do have a draft procurement policy. It has been completed. But what has happened is that as we were completing the draft the procurement policy, the central supplier database came into effect, and as a result, we had to align the policy to the central supplier database. And when we were busy with that, we then have the procurement bill, and the procurement bill, we had to make sure that the policy has to align itself to the procurement bill as well. And we are told that the procurement bill might be finalized as soon as possible. And these are the issues which at this stage are at least delaying the process in terms of the implementation of the procurement policy. When it comes to the issue of the 90 days, now the 90 days, Chairperson, honorable members, is being taken into account in the policy itself. However, it is important to note that if it's a procurement matter, that one will be easy to deal with. But when it comes to the bidding, then there is a challenge in that if you get 200 of those applications, you then have to go through each and every one of them, and then time becomes a factor in this regard. However, it has been addressed in the policy. The 90 days is being addressed in the policy as well. The decentralization of procurement, that has been done. Well, we are indicating in the slide how that has unfolded. We've got 3 procurement centers that has got a delegation of 5 million rand, 6 procurement units with a delegation of 1 million rand, and we've got procurement sections at the level of the support bases that are at 100,000 delegation, and 4 structure elements with a delegation of 30,000. Now, this is procurement has been decentralized to the lowest level in various in provinces, in regions within the country. That this is also to boost the local economy. Chairperson, moving on, this slide with regards to one military hospital, I'm going to skip this from slide 9 to slide 13. General Lidwaba is going to cover this slide. And I'll start off at slide number 14, which has got to do with the use of technology as a force multiplier for land and air border safeguarding. Chairperson, in this regard, the white paper has stated that there is a need to make use of technology as a force multiplier for border safeguarding in all domains of warfare, in all domains, air, border, land, and maritime. The Defense Review of 1998 has said the same, and the Defense Review of 2015 have also indicated the same, has pointed to the same requirement, wherein it makes reference to what is called technology innovation, as well as the appointment of the chief defense scientist. We constantly, as the department, continue to do research and development interaction with various institutions within the defense-related industry, and we also do so with the CSIR as well as IMT in the maritime environment. However, what is critical in this is the issue with regards to funding of the technology that is required. But this is a continuous process. We keep on doing it. It's called for by the defense policy, and we keep on looking at what are the latest technology which we can afford to procure and bring in to the department so that we can use them in these various domains. Chairperson, then with regard to airstrips, airports and airstrips within the countries, within the country, the registered ones and the unregistered ones. We've got, Chairperson, about 469 registered that are registered with the Civil Aviation Authority of South Africa. But we've got approximately 964 that are unregistered. Now, the total of all of these, it gives us a total figure of approximately 1,433 airfields and landing strips in the RSA. Now, this information was verified with Civil Aviation Authority, but the SANDF itself has got a database, and we also have an imagery capability that would be able to provide us with images to see where would you have some other airstrips that might be new, that might be created, etc. Now, Chairperson, the last one which talks about, the last bullet that talks about the radars. Now, the very nature of the radars allows us to detect even the UAVs. But, Chairperson, what we request here, which is what the Chief of Staff alluded to in his preamble to the presentation, that the specifics that we require, that we deal with them in a closed session. We are aware of the fact that the first presentation that was circulated had given a bit of an explanation, but the details of the radars, because they've got to do with the airspace and the deeper security discussion of these radars, how they work and how they function, we would request the Chairperson that if we can kindly, in a closed session, that we discuss with the, on this matter. Then with regards to outsourcing, Chairperson, what we did here is that we have taken a particular environment in the Department of Defense. We took a program just so that we make it easy to explain whether outsourcing is cheap or whether outsourcing would be expensive. And we decided to go with the military health services. Now, the first issue that we're talking about is outsourcing as an inherent medical service multiplier. What this means is therefore that outsourcing in some cases in the military health environment would be seen as a multiplier in terms of the core business of the military health service. Now, this is in relation, for example, to where you have, where it would not make, for instance, an economic sense to cater for ailments that suffices once or twice in a year. And the good example is when we talk about nuclear medicine, and as an example, and stem cell transplant. These two environments, if the equipment themselves will run into millions, and then you are going to have the human resource component that has to man the equipment,
on a daily basis. But there where you have the patient population that is by far too low, to have this, it is better outsourced. Because in that way, it might be seen as a cost-saving measure, in this case, where you do not have a lot of high population, patient population. Now, the geographic distribution, Chairperson, in the military, the units are spread all over the country, and some of them are there in urban and in semi-urban areas. And the military health units, they coexist with the military installations that exist in those areas. So, therefore, on this particular issue, if you are to take a patient that is in Northern Natal, for example, or up in the north in Limpopo, and he must go to one meal, there are other cost implications that are involved. Whereas if you have a facility, especially consideration is that of government facilities that are available and that can provide that service in that area, it is therefore better to outsource. And in some cases, it is where you would have to outsource to a private practitioner in that area who will be providing the same service that will be required. And then in so doing, you then avoid costs that might be involved, i.e. in travel costs, in accommodation, in meals, and relevant allowances that goes with that. So in this case, outsourcing might be or is a cost-saving measure. Now, the other is the state facilities. Now, on this one, this is the one that General Lidwava is going to talk more about it. And this is where you have got a lot of renovation that is taking place. And while you have got as well at the same time some of the facilities that have not been established as yet, and this they would therefore then call for the need for outsourcing. Well, I did speak of the fact that when there is some renovation, but there are some of the services which in a lot of military health services that are available spread around the country, i.e. your laundry service, laundry facilities, where you do not have a lot of patient population, it is better to, it will be a cost-saving measure to outsource this. And you do laundry as and when it is required. So not to have a laundry facility within that military, so say it's a sick bay, which is in one-to-one battalion in Northern KZN. In that case, it might be better to outsource. The other issue is the availability of health practitioners. Here in this case, if you do not have a certain health practice, you are forced to outsource. In this case, it may not be a cost-saving measure. It is just that you do not have an option, but you've got to outsource this service to health practitioners outside of the military. State equipment, quite important, because where you have got your medical equipment, for as long as those that must check a certain ailment are not serviceable or they are not in good condition, in that case then you are then forced to outsource. And that does not equal it being a cost-saving measure. So where you do not have health care practitioners and where the technology is not available, it's not necessarily a cost-saving measure, but just that you are forced then to follow the route of outsourcing. So in so saying, Chairperson, in some instances, outsourcing is a cost-saving measure. In some instances, it's unavoidable that you do it, irrespective of the fact that it may not be a cost-saving measure if you do your cost and benefit, your cost-benefit analysis. So this is the response in as far as this, and we've taken some, the Military Health Service, as an example, and we can deliberate during the discussion more on this matter. Chairperson, with regards to the property portfolio of the Department of Defense in relation to our endowment of property, the use of them to generate additional revenue, this matter is what the Defense Force currently is seized with what is called the Defense Review Funding Model. There's an exercise that is going on currently in the department. We started this exercise because we believe that we probably could leverage funding that would assist us to build capacity in terms of the capabilities that we have in the Department of Defense. With regard to the 99,560 days in 2015 that talks to the disability leave, Chairperson, I'm going to summarize this in the sense that we've got what is called a leave cycle, and a leave cycle is a period of 3 years. Now, the leave cycle that we had, we had it for 2013 and it ended up 2015, which is the year in question, which is part of what we have reported in our annual report. The previous one started 2010, 2011, and ended up 2012. Now, we have informed ourselves with our previous reports in this regard, and we found that in each leave cycle from 2013 to 2015, a member of the SANDF has been given 36 days sick leave. Now, the 36 days sick leave gets exhausted because of intensive training which we give to our soldiers and other things that happens, i.e. accidents, etc., etc. But in the main, from training and natural illnesses that comes to our soldiers. Now, you then find that the 36 days leave get exhausted in the process. Now, when it has been exhausted, in your last year of your leave cycle, you then have a situation where the temporary incapacity leave has to be granted to these members. And this is what has happened in this regard. But I think more clarity will be given as we deal with in discussing the matter. But the explanation is as given in the slide itself. Then, Chairperson, with regards to Operation Vimbezela, the equipment that have been lost, which were left in the Central African Republic, this is one of those areas which we felt that, although we have provided the slide, but we felt that it is a subject that needs a closed session in this regard, so that then we can discuss the details of what we have indicated to honorable members in those slides, as this is an operational matter that at the time there was a military operation. And this is the last slide is what General Masondo referred to say that there are some issues. When we look at them, we find that we will need a closed session, and therefore Central African Republic is one of those. Chairperson, on that note, I thank you, sir. General.
Thank you very much, Major General Ramaswamy. Very comprehensive presentation. General, you want to add, Lieutenant General Ramaswamy?
Chair, for now, no. Unless, of course, there are further questions on this, then we'll...
Now, honorable members, it will be over to you now to engage with the presentation. Honorable J.J. Skosana, Honorable Dambuza, Honorable Marae, Honorable Gamede, and Honorable Bongo, in that order.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Chairperson, let me thank the presentation made by General here. Chairperson, I just check the period in which cases are processed, because here you made mention the 2,396 cases, and you completed 957. What is left is 1,439. I just checked the process how long do you take to process cases? And also, as much as you process less number, then you will get more cases again in the following year. Then which means the number will remain the same or it will be bigger than the same. We just want to know a clarity there. And also the period of a bill, Chair. The bill is processed from now, early 2017, but it will go to Cabinet next year around June. Can I get a clarity, Chair, on that one? Because when I look to that period, too long, 1.5 years, the bill is just moving in between before it reaches the Cabinet. Really, I don't know whether we'll complete the bill when we complete this fifth term or not. No, thanks, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I also would like to join Honorable JJ thanking the presentation. Chairperson, I'm on slide 15 on the unregistered S3. In this presentation, we have got 964 unregistered. My question, Chairperson, how does this impact on the security, the risk part of it? And I also want to check, is there any contribution that the department has made in terms of the development of the International Migration Bill, which is being processed by the Department of Home Affairs currently? On those processes, are you also part of them? Because I think if we still continue to have unregistered airstrips, we are going to have a challenge. The other question is on slide 18 on the availability of health practitioners. I would like to check if the department has a database or a pool where they source in the those health practitioners. And if they do, what is their policy? Because if you do have a policy that will say that you will source from public institution, private institutions, and so on, so, and then you will have a cost, a maximum cost of you are going to pay if you have, you are sourcing that service. Then the last one is on the leave, slide 21. Yes, I fully agree with the presentation, the way it is. But I have a problem now. If you can just simply say there is currently no limitation, I think there should be some form of management. You should state some form of management of this, because you can take it up to a certain period and then it is reviewed, and then what do you do? How do you review it? You take that person to which institution for review of his or her condition. So I think seemingly there's something that is lacking here, Chairperson. It's just open-ended. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the opportunity. Just with regards to question one, correct me if I'm wrong. You've given us the number of backlog cases commencing 2016-17, and then you've given us the outstanding that has been declined in end of December, and the difference is the 957. So in other words, I assume that no cases were added during the commencement period and the 31st of December. I cannot think that can be correct. It means that there was no cases that was referred to military courts in that year. because we need to get to know, you know, the situation. We have received the situation commenced for 2016-17. We have got what has been reduced to or declined to a number, and what happened in that period, because that will give us an indication of how many were really processed and dealt with, and that is not clear from there. On question two, on both, the one thing that is clear from me from question two is that, according to that, backlogs are increasing at a hell of a pace. If we have received 96, we finalized 31. Now, that's in 1 year. That means that there's a two-thirds, roughly, that is added to the backlogs. Also, if you look at that second frame of question two, in terms of the liabilities, that is increasing in a dramatic way. And it seems like that backlog is just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Now, somehow, one must go and see and try to know what is the reason for that. Is it purely those appointments of military judges? Is it investigation that is a problem? Because clearly you're not getting, you know, on the front foot with all these cases. And do we know the reasons for these enormous increase in claims? I mean, I take the example of the accident on the road now towards KZN, where we, amongst others, lost the elephant tank and trucks. So I can just imagine from that accident there will be huge claims coming in. Do we know this? Have we made a risk analysis that we can identify whether it is driver problems, whether it's training problems? Why do we, you know, put ourselves at risk at such a magnificent pace? Because, you know, the figures speak for itself. In terms of question four, and again we see that there's quite a number of outstanding cases that's under investigation. The reason for those delays and increase, is it again, is the problem with the police service, with the NPA, or is it within military ranks? Do we have got a problem in terms of investigation capability and skills? Because if we do not have that, it means that it's not getting the right attention and it's not probably getting finalized. In terms of question five, I'm quite pleased to see that those procurement sections, ASB levels with 100,000 delegations and FSEs with 30,000 delegations. Chairperson, correct me if I'm wrong, when we visited the Pretoria on our oversight, the example that was given to us is 5,000. And in that example, they used a truck if it lost a tire. They can't even approve, you know, the replacement of a tire of one of the trucks. That must go through the central procurement process. Is this a change or an improvement to that? If so, very well. If not, please give us just the right information. Then in terms of question eight, on the airfields, the figures that you've mentioned is obviously all the airfields and landing strips in South Africa, but we know that most of that is not of interest to you. In terms of specifically land borders and sea borders that we have mentioned, that where this is deriving from, that is of particular risk interest to us. Do you know the airfields registered and unregistered within that border areas, in other words, those high-risk areas? And I remember one of the examples that was given to us is small aircraft that can fly across the border, drop off, pick up, and nobody doesn't even know about that.
Does that include that? What is that figure, that risk figure? Because obviously we cannot attend to all the airfields and strips in South Africa because they are not risky stuff. Then in terms of question nine, some of the big problems and concerns that we receive on a regular basis is when military hospitals cannot provide a specific service. Again, it might be perception. There's a reluctance to refer those patients, whether they're members or family members, to private hospitals or private practitioners. How do you deal with that? And has a decision like that been made? And I know that we have received that on a regular basis, especially about the family members of members of the military or veterans as well. And in that whole process, you've referred to private practices and private hospitals. But what is the relationship between the military and provincial hospitals? Because, you know, in some cases, you don't have to make use of private hospitals. You can make use of provincial hospitals, which is still a state facility. What is the partnership in that regard, and how do you cooperate in that regard to alleviate the pressures? On question nine is still, when you consider outsourcing, I maybe want to understand, you know, what are those realities that faces you to make a decision? Are you immediately thinking about the cost and whether you've got the budget, or are you really thinking about what is best for the patient, irrespective of the budget? And the family members. I need to understand, you know, what is psychologically going on when you consider those things. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. Thanks, sir. Firstly, let me add my voice in appreciating the presentation. But then I'll try and skip the questions that have been asked. But there are some of interest that will dwell into them, just like question two. You received about 96 and you finalized 31, as it says. But what is short, the meat with what is short is, what about the 65 that is left? At what stage are they? That's the first one. The second one is on question six. You know, when we visited there, we realized that major work is being done is 1 meter. The question we asked was, how do the HDIs benefit out of all that? And one of the responses we got was that, you know, this is a specialized field. As soon as you've got a healthcare consultant doing it, then we can say then the rest. Now I want to find out, since the process is unfolded, what plans are there? Maybe General Dwaba will ask that, to make it a point, more especially now after SONA 2017, that most of the work must be given to the previously disadvantaged. How are you going to do this with the construction and repairs to 1 meter? The question eight is one of interest also. You know, I respect what the general said about the sensitivity of the matter and of the question. But airports are points of entries, and they are part of the borders. Now, if you have got airstrips, by explanation, you might say all airports must be guarded. But then we have close to 1,000 airports that are unregistered, which are points of entry where anybody can enter and exit. How does the department a plan to safeguard that border, because those are borders. On top of the small planes that might fly below the radar, there are planes that might fly above your radar. Maybe it's a discussion for another meeting, maybe with General Nyende. But this is a problem. These are points of entry. You can explain just as far as you go. If you don't feel, you can go skin deep. On question 9, I think besides that there is a call to limit outsourcing, the second question I think underlying that was who benefits out of that outsourcing? Because when we got reports that we have outsourced this to this and this, we found that in most cases it was mostly all those who were previously advantaged who were benefiting to this outsourcing. How do we then come to do plan to close this gap that the HDIs purposely and directly benefit from outsourcing? Then on question 11, I think there was a strong feeling, and it didn't come from me, fortunately, also coming from the disability sector. There was a strong feeling that we felt there was too much, there was abuse of disability leave. That was the feeling we had those days. Because if you take the number of people with disabilities in department and reconcile them with the number of leaves, that is called disability leave, it doesn't tell you. So that is why we actually said, if you have got 2,000 employees with disabilities, even if we were to ask for it, it doesn't tell you that you would have 100,000 days disability leave. But then most of the explanation that we see here is that maybe other people are sick and so on for a long time. Then that's the complaint, the issue that we raise, that then aren't you abusing disability leave? Because in most cases it's called disability leave. That's the issue. And I think that's the last one for now, because others have been raised. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, thanks, Chair. I would like to join colleagues to appreciate the presentation. I think a lot of questions have been asked from one to... But as a response, Chair, maybe and as an advice to the department, we may need one more time to have what we call a turnaround dashboard around these issues. Because if we were to take, for instance, the issue of the bill, this bill was presented in 2014 when we arrived in this fifth parliament. It was presented to us, and it's unacceptable that it will be finalized next year, 2018 October 2018. It is just unacceptable, because this matter we've been battling with it. We've seen it, and I don't know what is the real delay on that part. We may have to look at the turnaround on how do we bring back the bill, because the backlog that we are relating to is also affected by the failure to pass the bill. I think we may have to look at that very close. And one matter that we have raised, I will not raise on question 2, because I agree with all the colleagues who say the figures are just not providing information as to the gaps, the 96, 91, where is the gap, and what is the pace at which these cases are escalating, because that would be very important. And the issue of cases, I think we also need some templates that will tell us when, who, and what will be done in terms of these cases, because the money involved is a lot of money. Other than the money involved is the number of employees involved. So the question will be, how does this affect the staff morale generally? If we have about 2,000 something and 1,000 something are still outstanding, and these people are expected to do some work, I think we've got to look at that very close. Then I'll go to question number 10. No, on question 10, I think we're moving at a very snail pace around this matter. You would recall, Chair, that it was the department itself that came to us and said, if you pass the defense review, we are ready to can do X, Y, Z. We've done that a year or two ago, but we're not moving with the same speed at which we have passed the defense review to be able to deal with these endowment properties, because we have identified and we have said bring any recommendation if it must go to Treasury or anywhere, and that we have said already in the past financial year, that we need to deal with this matter so that we create an alternative revenue generation. It was the same issue that we have agreed to, which is also in the defense review, of us having to have force multipliers. Is going to be answered by the very same issues of endowment properties. If we create the alternative revenue generation, then it solves the problem in terms of being able to deal with both phase one and phase two of the defense review. So I think all we need to do is just to accelerate the pace at which we're dealing with these issues, because some of them are issues that we have already deliberated on 2 financial years ago, some financial year ago. So mine is to say that we need to accelerate the pace at which we're dealing with these issues so that we move faster. Because at the center of the defense is the territorial protection of the territorial integrity, is the protection, protecting the sovereignty. We're not going to be able to do so if we're not moving with some of these issues that have been raised here. So I think we need to move from a space of doing desktop exercise to a space of practicalizing what we've already dealt with in the past meetings that we've already had. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Issa.
Good morning. Thank you very much, Chair. I think the first question I want to touch on without repeating any of the other questions is number 2, where we got 26 cases settled in favor of the department. Was there any recovery of cost? Because we only see the loss of money, 859 million, which is almost R1 billion. And this department had to cut back its budget by R1 billion. And if these cases that are against, is there any contingent budgeting that's taking place? If there's no contingent budgeting, there's a double loss of R1 billion to Treasury and a R1 billion to litigation and cases. So I'd just like to know, is there recovery of cost if we win cases? Other one is the contingent budget that we have to always consider when we deal with all different types of cases, litigation, whatever cases we handle with. Do we make provision for that? And of course, when you deal with cases at this extent, with so many cases, one likes to establish, if you do research, that you do a trends analysis, which means which are the things that are repeated the most, how can we plug the holes not to have that repeated, so that we can avoid it in future and avoid cost to the defense. Has that been done? Has the policy changed accordingly, taking those trends into consideration? Otherwise, it doesn't make sense that these things are repeated every single year, the similar cases are repeated, and we are paying. It doesn't make sense. So we'd like to have some idea of how things are actually done and to improve the situation. I'm not going to speak about the urgency of the bill. If things are so urgent, it doesn't make sense the way we do things now and then delay it when we demand that this bill should go through Parliament, and we see now it's delayed and it will impact on the discipline in the military. And that's one of the key problems that we have, and that also led to court cases. The other one is the question number 4, on the procurement and SEM and contracting investigations, etc. What happened to individuals? Were there any individuals of defense implicated? What's the status of the individuals? What is the cost that impacted on this department through those issues? We don't see any cost here, but there's lots of investigations are happening, so there are huge costs also attached to it. And also there, when these things are investigated, is the capacity there, as raised by my colleague, to actually deal with it effectively. And that's the worst thing in SAPS as well. Poor report writing, poor investigation, and we lose most of the cases. Criminals get away with murder. I hope this is not in this case where people are going to get away with murder and with money that is due to the state and for our soldiers. The other one is, if I continue with this, is the, we're going to speak separately about the ramp and about the hospital, so I'm not going to deal with those questions now. The issue of question number 7 is the borders safeguarding. We've asked very specific questions. I can listen to all the explanations and all the understandings of the closed sessions, etc. My issue is very simple, that the NAL and others have developed drones. It's been used in the for the rhino poaching. It's been used in the Kruger Park. Why isn't there a simple drone put on and the distances to be extended, greater capacity with the batteries, so that they can cover our borders that are so porous? So much crime has been committed by bringing in illegal things into the country and illegal persons coming to the country, and also stolen goods that are leaving the country. We know these are problems, and we say that we still have a closed session. For so many years, we are not addressing the issue. So it's a very simple thing. We want a straightforward answer. Why can't we have force multipliers, which is drones that are there available, and you can do many things with drones. Besides that, in warfare, you can even send supplies, medical supplies, to places that you can't normally get, and a very quick response to it. So this is not an answer. We have capacity. We have drones in South Africa being developed. We have drones developed in other countries as well that are being used. I'm not getting a straightforward answer. The other one is, Honorable Chair, the one that is always a problem for me is that when I hear about all this loss of money to the department, and I hear there's only 50% of medical supplies available at hospitals. Now, this has escalated. The number of complaints that I receive from people complaining not getting medicine, and at one mill specifically, that people come in every day and only a certain people amount of service, and others must then leave and come back the next day. There's no number, there's no queue. You come, if you get, you get. If you don't get, you just go home. And we've warned this department that we cannot treat our soldiers that we claim to honor in the same way. And this is how we treat them. This is only with the medicine side. So the medicine is in a terrible state. The other one is now we have agreements with provincial and state hospitals and clinics. So we're putting more pressure now onto state institutions by military veterans, by soldiers, etc. And the same situation prevails where the masses of people go. 50% of medical supplies. So we only exacerbate the situation. We don't improve the situation. It needs to be addressed. It's a critical matter, particularly if people leave the force, they are aged. That's the first thing that they look at, is a medical aid, is medical support, and to be able to live a healthy life, not to suffer, and many of them are actually suffering. So I've got a great concern about this, and where money is gone into all types of other litigation and wasted, almost $1 billion, and then we're under supply, and we can't even see to that 50% medical supply. The other one, of course, is the practitioners. It's not only those cases, as Honorable Chair, of nuclear problems of this. We understand that if you have special equipment and special practitioners that need to come in for those cases. We're talking about simple, straightforward things like scanners. We speak about dental surgery. Simple things that are experienced by most people. That is not even available. And the extent of the availability is even worse. That's why we have the Zeal case. And there's money attached to that case as well. That's spending contingent liabilities. So the state of the hospitals, the state of our service is completely not serving our soldiers that we're supposed to be proud of. I'm not going to speak about the incapacity leave. I think there's enough issues raised on that one. The issue that I'd like to properly raise is, let me just say, that is also a closed session. So we can't speak about it. So the details of that, and I think we need to have a closed session, Honorable Chair, that we can really get to the bottom of certain things. We can't discuss it here. Everything is limited. If we have to go up to head office, go sit down with everybody there and have an in-depth discussion so we can appreciate the situation and ask the questions we want to ask. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members. That should wrap up your questions for now. Major General, tell me, when there is a litigation against the department, do you seek legal advice as to whether, if you have to oppose, is winnable or not, or you just do what government departments do, just oppose any litigation for the sake of opposing? Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Before we come to respond to the question posed by honorable members, I just want to address the issue of frustration by members. There are issues that we are not comfortable to discuss in an open session. Chair, honorable members will recall the session that we had at Defense HQ, and in that session we had an open and frank discussion in terms of all the questions that were posed by honorable members. Last year when we came here to present on the state of readiness of the SANDF, again, we are constrained in terms of answering some of the questions that were posed by honorable members. And we, at that session, at the end of that session, also made a request and invited the honorable members.
General Masondo.
Yes, sir.
Let me just assist here. Look, in terms of what you should say in this committee and what you should not say, Parliament has got processes. You don't have to explain to Parliament. It's us who will identify the correct platform as to where, what information, where you should reveal this information. So don't. It says it's our. Don't label yourself with
that,
our baby.
Yeah. Okay. No, thank you, Chair. I was making that remark because I could see the level of frustration with the discussion that we're having at times, as if we're trying to avoid our responsibility to account to committee. Now, Chair, several questions have been asked, and I want to propose that we'll go question by question so that if there's something maybe that we have omitted in terms of our answers, then we can give the honorable member who actually posed the question the opportunity to clarify where sometimes we didn't understand the question properly or didn't note it down properly. We're going to commence with the questions from Honorable Skosana, where he expresses concern about the time it takes to complete litigation cases, and also pointing out that at the rate we are going, actually the backlog is likely to increase, and also the time it is taking to process the military disciplinary bill for it to eventually come to Parliament. Now, on the first question, I need to point out that we've got a huge challenge with the staffing levels of our legal department, and the litigation section is a very small section, which is faced with this big workload. But at times, of course, we engage the services of external legal personnel of firms. But in some instances, the nature of the case itself is such that it results in a long-drawn process. Because at times when we look at the case itself and we feel that we are on the wrong, then we want to settle out of court and we maybe make an offer to the litigant. And we find that maybe they are not satisfied with the offer, settlement offer that we are making. And therefore, the process therefore is to then continue all the way, maybe to the extent of sometimes then going to the courts. So it's an issue that ourselves we are frustrated with, but I'm sure if, members of the committee are aware that as a department we are sitting with a huge salary bill. And therefore, given those challenges, in some instances we are therefore not able to capacitate the environments where we feel we are not strong enough to deal with the extent of the work we are faced with. On the issue of the military disciplinary bill, I need to point out that the frustration that has been expressed here by honorable members is the frustration that as a military command we also share. And we would know that the military disciplinary bill started in the financial year 2012-2013. And for a long time it was with the Office of the State Law Advisor for Certification. And I think we also need to understand that within the legal fraternity, some of the legal officers who are working there are not so much au fait about the military as a profession. And therefore, when they look at this bill and they look at our constitution, sometimes they don't understand that for the military to work effectively, there are certain rights of members that have to be limited so that we are able to be effective. So, in a sense, they come with that kind of scrutiny to make sure that this bill, you know, is compliant with the Constitution, which, whereas there's nothing wrong with that, but forgetting that the defense is a unique environment. And I want to say in this regard, the Chief of the Defense Force himself had to intervene and had to meet with the State Law Advisor. And through that intervention, the certification process was fast-tracked. But as a department, we are still not happy with the product of that, because somehow it deviates from the original draft. So we're still engaging on that. But it is at a stage now where it is being processed through the JCPS cluster, and they've got their processes that we have to follow. It was presented there, it was referred to the development committee, and of course through the development committee there has to be a consultation process with other departments. And the speed of that consultation process, we've got no control over that. And it is the JCPS cluster that has to actually make sure that the other departments that have to provide comments, they do that speedily, and so that this can be fast-tracked. We ourselves, as the military command, when we're given these timelines, we're very worried, but we're assured that from the department, everything possible is being done to fast-track this bill. So all I'm saying, yes, we understand the frustration of honorable members. It is the frustration that we also share. But these are processes that are there which we cannot bypass or try to circumvent. I hope I've answered your question. If we have to come to Honorable Tambuza in terms of unregistered airstrip, and how these impact on the security. Of course, they have a huge impact on the security. Because in our defense committee meetings, where we meet with our colleagues from the region, we get complaints that there are a number of small aircraft that sometimes take off from these airstrips into their territory. And of course, we seem not to be doing anything about this. The chief of the National Defense Force, in his intent, he said the Air Force has to be capacitated to be able to cover the full extent of the air defense of the country. And we're working towards that. But you would know, Honorable, that our budget as a defense force is shrinking, much as we want to do some of these things, but the speed with which we are able to do them will be influenced by the availability of funds. In terms of whether we are involved as a department in the internal migration bill, I cannot give a firm answer. I'll ask my colleague, Chara Ramatswana, to learn. But there was a directive from Chief of the Defense Force that our leader needs to get involved in all bills that are generated by other departments that may have an impact on our work. But I cannot with certainty say we are involved, but maybe Chara Ramatswana would know. I'll ask him to come in on that. General Ramatswana?
General, sir, our involvement is through the legal division in this regard. And the other thing is that we discuss with Home Affairs with regards to their integrated border management strategy. So there is a link. We've got a team that goes in there to sit and discuss with them. But as for the bill itself, the input is coming mainly from our legal division, and that we do sit in the JCPS cluster. So we have got insight of what the bill contains in the migration bill. So we do have insight into it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Gerard. Now also, Honorable Tambuza raised concern about the availability of health practitioners in our facilities, and further asks whether we actually have a pool from which we are recruiting health practitioners or officials. I think Honorable Dambuza would know that as a country, we've got a challenge with health practitioners, not only in the defense, even in the public health space. There is a challenge. That's why, as a country, also then brought Cuban doctors who are working in the rural areas and all that. So recruitment is done from the same source as the health department is doing. And of course, I think we have challenges in our recruitment processes which we are looking into, because they are not prompt in terms of finalizing the recruitment process itself, where you find some health practitioners who are interested in joining our health military health services. You know, they have to wait long before actually the applications are finalized, and there are challenges around the vetting, you know, of potential applicants and all that. But these are issues that we're working on. But also, I'm sure you're aware that because of the challenges of our facilities and all that, we've also lost some of the health practitioners who are already serving. Because where you lack certain medical equipment and all that, some of them get frustrated and naturally move to areas where they can get job satisfaction. In terms of the leave, I think your concern is the fact that there's no limitation in terms of the numbers of sick leave that members are allowed to take. Perhaps on that, I would ask the assistance of Chara Sichongai just to explain how we manage leave. And also maybe if you can touch on the average leave days used by individual members. I know the total numbers, they look big, as if maybe members on an individual basis actually taking many days leave, whereas in some instances it's not really that much.
Thank you very much,
Chairperson.
I just want to explain that the process of leave is called ill health leave or temporary incapacity leave. It's only applicable after a person has exhausted the 36 days of leave in a cycle of 3 years. And once that happens, then every leave that has been certified by a medical doctor, that leave will be verified in a case of a civilian by an independent healthcare practitioner. And those people, they will go and verify that whether the leave is authentic and is justifiable. In any event that leave is found not to be justifiable or authentic, then the person will be required to come back and put in leave, vacation leave, or unpaid leave. So if the person continue becoming sick up to a level that you find that the doctor feels that the person is becoming permanent incapacitated, then the member may ask for permanent incapacity leave, incapacity, and then that is going to be what you call ill health retirement, or the department itself we may also request and initiate the process of incapacity. And that is how we handle it. And this leave, it becomes too much normally in the last year of a cycle, because most people would have already used their 36 days. And then what will happen, and each and every sickness that the person will, or illness that will acquire, then that will be registered. Whether it's a flu, whether it's an injury, or when you are training, some of these members, when they train, sometimes they get some kind of some injuries. And whether it's from a sport, then that's what happens. So these numbers are becoming more. We can see that most of these people, when you see the average leave that they take, is a plus minus 7. Some of these people normally take their leave. If you can spread across the population. But those members who have used more leave more than 36 days, meaning that the people who were really sick, they are more plus minus 400 members of in the list of the people that were checked during the time of that leave cycle. So in a nutshell, that the leave, it is being checked and it is being controlled. It's not necessary that it's not easy to get. But in any event, that people they don't want to come, then they may be charged for if they are misusing their leave. Thank you very much.
General, you have 15 minutes to round up the answers now, so that we must take the other presentation by General Leduaba.
Chairperson, sorry to the chair. Before the chair, I think the issue is the terminology on the leave, because it's called disability leave. Well, can we find a better word, maybe?
I think that I can say that we do with the ill health is a temporary incapacity. That's how it's been called in our policy. We refer to it as temporary incapacity. Then where we call disability, there is a disability leave for disabled people. That is another category within our leave policy. But this one was just only referring to members who have exhausted their leave as their leave eligible days, and then thereafter then they declared temporary incapacity. That's what we call it, temporary incapacity. So we will then change. I think we need to change the heading of the question in our reporting document.
Chairperson, through you, I was just saying the question is right, the first one. Then this one is the second question. So I think if he has an opportunity now, he can just continue to talk about the leave and then finish the question of leave and then come back to me.
Okay, General. Were you done?
I think I've just tried to clarify the disability as reflected. The disability leave, in our policy of leave, we have what we call disability leave that deals with it. So, for instance, those people are disabled. They sometimes get some kind of a disability leave if there is a requirement. But this one that we are referring to an ill health, which makes a person disabled for some time because he has already exhausted his sick leave. So in an event that a person, I think maybe we should maybe correct the template and not to refer to this as a disability leave, maybe we refer to the temporary incapacity leave.
Chairperson, maybe just as not something to answer now, but in the future, you'll have to explain to us then, if you look at disabled people, what do you categorize as disability leave? Because does it mean that once a person has been disabled, it gets put into a different box? Is there a different leave for them? You know, what is the conditions of then a disability leave? Because that opens up a total different box of how you deal with people with disabilities, whether you are categorizing them and labeling them, or you know, that one can understand why you're treating them then differently in terms of leave. Is it disability sick leave? Is it disability holiday leave? I mean, you know, it's very important. It's very important that we must absolutely understand and get the assurance of how people with disabilities are treated.
Thank you very much. That is, in this case, leave will be leave. You cannot say people who are disabled, their leave is special. But my understanding, I understand when you try to explain, talk about temporary disability and you need to correct the terminology so that it should be clear. So as to whether do we have a temporary disability or categorized in terms of government policy, how do we categorize a disability? I think that is the way where you cross, the lines are crossing. Thank you very much. Can we quickly run through the questions that you...
Thank you, Chair. In the 15 minutes I have, I'm not sure I'll do justice to all the questions. But some questions have been asked which are touching on issues that we've already tried to provide answers to. So I'll work through these quickly and look at those issues that perhaps we have not... in terms of the litigation, we have addressed the issue of capacity. But I think there's a point that Honorable Mare wanted to know whether, from the opening balance, are we recording the cases that are... Yes, we're doing that. If you look at column 3, that figure of 70,624, those are new cases, you know. And then the figure of 15, those are the ones that we've been able to deal with. You know. And then...
Can I just correct you? I mean, I've referred to that first question block. And if you take the amount commenced, in other words, that's what you started, that was, you know, brought from the previous term.
Yes.
And if you deduct the 957 cases that was finalized, you get to the 1439. It means that nothing was added. And that's what I've said. If you look at the second and third a slide, you see there was in fact cases added, but
yes,
not in terms of this sum. So your first one is wrong then. You cannot start with this with one, add nothing, and then have an end result. There's something in between, and those you haven't discounted in that first slide.
Will you look into that and correct it if you find that error?
Okay, Chair, we'll maybe that's not...
No, to correct it now.
Yeah.
Okay, to then correct it if there's an error.
And then there's a question whether we are actually doing some risk analysis in terms of this litigation. Yes, of course, on a monthly basis, we get presentations on this, and we also zoom into vehicle accidents and the reasons for that. We have done some investigation as to whether maybe there's any inadequacy in terms of our driver training, but we've been assured that there's nothing wrong with training, but the problem is with the negligence of some of the drivers. We're taking measures to take stern disciplinary, and also we are looking at having some dedicated drivers to vehicles, because if it is like that, then a driver takes pride in a vehicle and can actually be, he knows that ultimately will be responsible if something goes wrong there. On the questions on reluctance to refer members to private hospitals and whether we when we consider outsourcing, the primary consideration is cost or the ailment, I'll ask Gerald Wood just to touch on that quickly.
Honourable Chair, thank you for that question. With regards to healthcare, we must remember, and General Sondo also referred to that, healthcare is a system. So you must have your HR, your facilities, your equipment, your technology, and your funding in place. When we outsource, it's because all of those factors at the same time is not in place. Most of this is funding driven. If I can refer to your question then with regards to outsourcing, we outsource according to a specific patient fee structure. We are very strict in outsourcing. but the healthcare practitioners at heart always have the interest of the patient. That's what they've been trained for. We try and outsource as much as what we can to provincial hospitals, but many instances, even the provincial hospitals do not have the specialist capabilities, and we refer to private outsource suppliers as well. What is extremely important, though, is that if one looks at our current wage bill or the HR, 75% in the in-year of our HR consumes our total allocation, which leaves us with 25% for an operating budget. If I bring that back to operating a healthcare system, it becomes extremely difficult to do.
Can you also touch on the medical stocks, please, available?
With regards to medical stocks, again, this is funding driven. Currently, we try and keep our medical stocks at a level of 50%. This is in line with one of the guidelines of National Treasury, where National Treasury also indicates that if you have resource dilemmas, that you should not keep too much stock on your shelves. And that's why we have brought that target to 50%, which just means that one must keep your target at 50% and your stock levels at 50% in order to cater for the patient population. What I would like to indicate here as well, and it brings me back to the outsourcing, is that 50% of our members are members of in uniform that stays within bases or near bases. 70% of our client population are not members in uniform, so they're not from the military skills development regular force or active reserve force members. And that makes outsourcing also extremely viable to do then, because they don't live near military healthcare facilities.
Thank you. I think then we'll address the question of whether historically advantaged persons benefit from outsourcing of medical services. The manner in which we source services in the department, all the individuals or entities that want to provide services to the department, they register on our database. And therefore, that database is then used to actually invite the people who provide services, especially when they've tendered and we see that the price is reasonable. And of course, I think then the starting point would be perhaps if there could be a call from the historically disadvantaged individuals to actually take up that opportunity to register first and foremost, and then they can be part of this, they can benefit from this process. So I think I will stop there because we've actually tried to answer others.
Chairperson, there was just two of mine that was not addressed.
The one
was about the procurement amounts versus that with we have been told about the 5,000 rand, and the other one that was not dealt with is that's the important one. Just deal with that one, please.
Chair, you have given me 15 minutes to round up, and that's why I've noted this question, but I will quickly try and address it.
The other one was the airstrips and facilities close to borders, land and sea borders.
Yeah, that one we tried to, we've answered it to.
That was a more general question. Mine was very specific. Whether you know the quantity, if you can give us the number of airstrips in terms of that risk analysis, which is close to borders, register and unread.
Okay.
No, it's fine.
Yeah.
If there are any, just answer that one.
Yeah.
If there are any other questions that are remaining,
okay,
you are going to give us written answer.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Offhand, I'm not able to give you an answer in terms of parents because we have not looked into that currently, but we can bring you an answer later on that as to the numbers of those along the borders. But in terms of the decentralization process and the fact that at the unit level, they've got a delegation of about 5,000, which constrains them in terms of, as the example you made, for instance, repairing a tire of a truck. It is a challenge. We're looking into this, and with time we're going to be revising this delegation. But first and foremost, we want to have an assurance that as they are decentralized, the people actually are utilizing the delegation responsibly. Because in the past, the delegation also was 30,000, and it was reviewed to 100,000 to address those particular challenges. So as the people show that they are responsible enough to exercise this delegation, then they are reviewed and increased. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, I think we need to go to the second item on the progress made in the repair and maintenance of One Mutaro Hospital. It's not supposed to take long, that one, you know. General Lidor. General.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. I'll try to speed to run this with speed and answer a number of questions which were raised. This is the aim. Now, just to remind the member, Honorable Members, that we received the hospital from Public Works with shortcomings which it was very clear that they are critical and had to be addressed to make the first floor particularly to be functional and compliant to the regulatory framework as indicated in the table below. I'm just going to be showing the contrast between what was Public Works going to deliver when they were doing the function and our taking over what is it that it has done. And I would need to mention that Honorable Members came to One Mutaro Hospital. You remember when the equipment were lying down and so on. If you were to go back there today, that place we have cleared. I'll show some photos here that we have actually broken the walls in preparation of the hospital. In that process, we have been able to save close to 7 million rand, and we would like to argue that going forward, we will reduce the construction period. Now, let me straight away answer the question of outsourcing as a result of unavailability of One Mutaro Hospital. We've just taken a quick snapshot from 2010-11 until now, that is 2015-16. That analysis shows that 2010-2011, we outsourced because of the unavailability of first floor, 45.9 million, and to date, we outsourced 98.2 million. So it just shows that there is a growth of amount lost due to outsourcing because of the unavailability of the first floor. Now, what is it that we were outsourcing? What is written on the left that that will be on the table there on the left? It will include hospitalization and all that list. That is what is being outsourced as a result of the unavailability of the first floor. However, this excludes the issues which are the other maintenance issues. And I think there was a question of ramp and so on. Some of the things which ramp should have addressed for the entire hospital, the things which were not addressed, they are now still remaining. But there are other mechanical and electronic works which supply the entire hospital, which are also not addressed. But we are going to address some of them as we are going forward. I'm just going to go through this scope just to quickly indicate what we have done and as opposed to what Public Works was going to do. On the left-hand side, we say that the DPW project, they were going to retain the hospital as it is and try to modernize it to the best of their ability. The first floor will therefore partially comply with functionality and legal compliances. DPW would have delivered 5 digital theaters in the first phase, and in the next phase, it will have completed 8 theaters. Now, our contention here was that the theaters were going to be, the 5 theaters were going to be done in the same space as the future 8, which are going to be then undermining the operationalization of the 5 at that time. Now, what we are doing is that we are designing a modern, in terms of medical practices, modern design of a hospital in terms of best medical practices, and we are reconfiguring the according to functionality of the first floor to comply with legal compliances. Now, the things which we are adding there, you've got theater complex, which will include 13 theaters with a recovery facility and supporting facilities, centralizing service department, which will render washing, disinfection, and sterilizing services, and all those things which you see there. Vents isolation unit, which will be addressing the things as listed. We are also talking of intensive care unit, casualty department, radiology department, and then I think we have spoken about the CT scanners, MR scanners, and so on, and the laboratory department. That will include hematology, chemistry, molecular, micro, immunology, and TB laboratory, fridges, and an incubator in supporting the facilities. On the other side, Public Works would have retained the current pharmacy, and I think when you visited, you have seen that the pharmacy does not really comply with legislation. Actually, it got an indication that it is not supposed, it must be closed, actually. And the pharmacy received, as we said, contravention notices from the pharmacy board on numerous occasions. Now, what other things which Public Works would have done would have been to retain the current dysfunctional histology laboratory. The histology laboratory is actually situated at Littleton, but it's supporting 1 military hospital. Now, what we are doing is that with the construction of the new pharmacy, we are going to be, we are addressing already all those legislative things. And the plans, our plans have been approved by the fire department, they've been approved by the pharmaceutical council already. So as soon as we build the pharmacy, then it will be complying to all regulatory framework. The construction of a new histology laboratory at 1 military hospital will reduce the risk of that support and also the logistical nightmare which the doctors are facing of having to get samples from Littleton to 1 military hospital. Now, the project of Public Works was not going to be addressing mechanical, electrical, and electronic systems that cannot be separated from the first floor. Now, we are going to be addressing those, and the list is indicated there, whether it is fire detection and public address systems and so on. On the other side, Public Works, in terms of their approach, they were not going to be making the medical equipment as part and parcel of the project. Means they were going to continue to build the facility and then later buy or let SAMS buy the medical equipment. And we have seen that it creates a dilemma where you finish building. When the medical equipment comes, you must break in order to accommodate them, or sometimes you must make certain adjustments. Now this,
ourselves, we are appointing medical technology specialists, that is the health technologies, on equipment, so that it runs parallel and it is part and parcel of the project. The tender for this was closed on the 10th of January, and I will be giving the timelines as we go to the next. Now, I've addressed the advantage of us having had to get the medical technologies. On this picture, we are just showing quickly that the blue part, it is what I have indicated, the theaters. Now, the five theaters and the additional ones were going to be in the same space, and we were saying that they were going to contaminate. The big red block indicates the histology laboratory, which is not part of the one military hospital, which we are taking from Littleton. We're going to put it at the hospital. This is just a bigger picture and indicating all other areas. Now, coming to the timelines, we are saying that we call for tenders for medical technology services on the 2nd of December 2016. Now, what process did we follow there, or what has been the process? The cross indicates that procurement was a process, a key process, which says the timing and everything else. And then closing of tender, 10th of January. It is a tender process, that is a procurement process. And then the appointment of medical technologists will be, we are hoping that by the 28th of February or early next month, it should have been finished by CPSC and DCPB. Then the completion of tender documentation, including medical equipment design, because then we will have acquired the medical technologies. Then they are going to require some time to prepare their documentation and also to say what equipment are going to go. That's why we are saying that that process then is governed by the procurement process, but the engineering processes will also then be influencing how fast can this appointed company give us the kind of equipment, and to what extent is it going to then impact on the drawings for the architects and so on. Then a call for tenders and evaluate tenders, receive and appoint building contractors, 31 August 17, that is our projection, and that process then will be taken over. It will be the procurement process which guides us. Then construction and commissioning of the hospital. We anticipate that if the procurement process is quick enough, we should be able to have an 18-month construction period, which will then make the hospital to be delivered 28 February 19. Now, in terms of the timelines, we are saying that the building construction documentation was completed but had to be put on hold. That was the drawings and everything else because of the medical equipment design to be incorporated. I need to declare here that initially we did not really know that you have to appoint medical technologists for equipment. But then, as we were doing research and asking about hospitals which were built before, we went to Treasury and we were advised by a section in Treasury to say that their experience with the hospitals which were built, if you build a hospital and you forget to bring in medical equipment as part and parcel, then you are doomed because you are going to go backward forward. Then what we are saying, that the design of the medical equipment may influence the already completed drawings. And in time, procurement processes are also required in order to achieve the set procurement timelines. So this is a rider on our projections of the timing. In terms of the cost, we are saying that the building cost, this amount, estimated cost, is at, we were saying, 300, 400 million. This amount, we need to say that it is there on our budget for the construction because it was what was there. What was not there, it is the 600 million or 700 million, which is for buying of medical equipment. But we have already made a policy proposal to Treasury on this particular one. So we hope that it will be addressed. And the total cost, as it is there, estimated, depending on all other factors, we see it as 1.0 billion. Now, just to take you back on memory lane, the places which you visited, we had indicated we are going to be breaking down these places. And this was the work which was done by the Defense Works Formation. And I just want to quickly indicate the extent of work which the Defense Works Formation has done. These are the pipes which we took outside the walls of the one military hospital, just to show you the extent of the problem with the hospital, which obviously one would not have seen had we not broken the walls. Now, after that whole place which you traveled, it is now a very huge open area. These are the walls which we have broken down in order to prepare for the contractors which are coming. And we think that is going to make it much easier for them to be able to prepare. This is a theater area. And that I can say that it is largely the end of the presentation. We're just showing where we are going and what we have done. And Honorable Chairperson, that is the presentation on One Military Hospital.
Thank you very much, General. Honorable members, I suggest that because we're given timelines, we should factor the timelines. Those which need our oversight visits, we must factor them in our program and then continue oversighting this institution, if it's okay with you. Okay, yeah. Now, look, if we have any comments and points of clarity, can we quickly do that, Honorable Members? And, okay. Honorable Murray?
Thank you, sir. If I start right at the end of your presentation, I mean, what is concerning to me and also frustrating, I mean, this is a process that has started very, very long ago. You remember the last couple of times that we were in Pretoria, we did oversight there, and we raised the concern that you know, the only progress is broken walls, but nothing else. If you go back to the design stage of this, I mean, from any project point of view, I would imagine that all of these things should have been part of the design process. I get the impression that this was a haphazard and like in isolation, a lot of work was done. Somebody decided we're going to do this, so we knocked down the walls. Somebody say we're going to design something, but they don't bring in the medical equipment. Where was that problem? Was that with Department of Public Works? Because if that was the case, then, Mr. Chairperson, then we will have to interact, because it seems like the Department of Public Works has cost this government millions and millions and millions and millions of rand by doing a poor job. Or was it really your problem? Or are you the culprits that is costing us now millions of rand? Because every time that we visited one military hospital, it is the same situation. And the only progress is knocking down of walls, but poorer service delivery. So how did this happen? How did this happen? And I mean, to leave out 660 million rand for medical equipment, how did that person or that designers think that you're going to operate a hospital without medical equipment? How on earth? I mean, I think even in kindergarten, you will learn that there are things that you have to do or keep in mind when you plan something. The other thing I just want to find out quickly, right in the beginning on the fifth slide, it was mentioned what is excluded, NB. All the above are currently fully outsourced and DPW has failed to pay the contractors, resulting in shutting down of services, e.g. boilers, air conditioners, etc. Now those are critical things. Has that been resolved? Because again, you're talking about timelines and doing things. But if there are legal actions brewing in terms of service providers not being paid, then they will prevent you from proceeding and finalizing the job, because it's their equipment and they've got a contract, but they are not getting paid. Are we paying our other service providers within 30 days as prescribed by government policy? Thank you.
Honorable Issa?
Just two or three quick questions. One is that in slide 13 that we receive on question number 6, the total is 918,730,000. That is what I see in front of me. And then on the presentation itself, it says 1,047,000. So there's a discrepancy in that also. Just to update it, it's not aligned. And clearly we can see where the problem lies in both the building and medical equipment. So this is going to go online, Honorable Chair, only in 2020, more or less, after the construction and installation, etc., which means we're still going to continue for the next 3 financial years with outsourcing. What contingencies have been taken into consideration? Even basic services is quite clear. On the first floor, whether it's blood services, pathology, whether it is dental services, that is even absent. So there's going to be a lot of outsourcing at a higher cost. And also the preparation for 2020, if this goes online and the hospital is not upgraded fully, are all those health practitioners lined up, or already preparation is being made exactly what will be required when that HR process is taking place and the budgeting that will be affected, etc.? Has that planning also run parallel with this development? Otherwise, we're going to come to a white elephant and also services lacking, and we're going to lose more money because we're not prepared and still continue after the building is complete with outsourcing. So the planning here is not in sync with many things, which we don't hear. Only hear now that this has now been reconsidered, and it's actually poor planning, poor design, that so many things are considered 10 years later. So I think we need to up the game here. It is not the expertise of the defense itself to be in this area. So we want to improve. So I think we need to have better partnerships and get more people in that actually knows exactly what's required. Otherwise, we're going to struggle and straddle along the way, and we're going to make mistakes again. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Chairperson, I should think the time we visited the hospital, things were not looking so good, and also the plans and the progress was not convincing. But where the department does the right thing, we must comment and say they've done the right thing here. So we can see a progress. There is a plan. There is a budget. Notwithstanding that there were challenges before and problems. But now we are getting there, Chair. Really, we must really thank the department, which means they have shifted from where they were. We can't just hit on them, even if they are doing a good thing. But we look those things that have been happening in the past. We can't just lament with them, and in fact, on them. But for now, really, we must appreciate the move. Unlike the time we visited the hospital, there were shocking issues there, but for now, we're going somewhere. Chair, I don't have a problem with us to revisit the hospital and other areas. But I should think we must also encourage and support the department to do their work. That's what we must do here. And they are here to present the progress. Now it's on us to evaluate whether the progress is convincing or not. But I'm saying the progress that we have now, it shows that we are going somewhere. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Those are the comments. If there is anything general that you need to clarify, can you quickly do that?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I think we need to, on the onset, to say that the same frustrations are the ones which made the minister to approach the Minister of Public Works and say, I am taking over the hospital and I am going to be running the project myself. And that is where we discovered that, because as we were going forward, he said, we are not just going to inherit what we got from Public Works and go with their program, but we are going to analyze their program and say, are they going in the right path? And indeed, as I've indicated here on the presentation, there were a lot of flaws which were there, and we have therefore eradicated all those. Just a confirmation, we took the hospital 2014, December 2014, that is when the minister made the decision, and we took it over. So this progress which we are talking about, it is starting from December 2014 up to date. And we are very comfortable that we are engaging all professional teams and all stakeholders. And so far, what we are going to deliver, we are very confident that it will be something better than what was initially planned. I would like to agree that had we let this thing in the hands of Public Works, we were not going to receive what we want, because they were not going to buy medical equipment, as an example. We take note of the issue of the HR. I think Sergeant General is actually part and parcel of this team. He is now planning ahead also to be ready that as soon as we bring the equipment, the doctors must be able to come in. And this exercise we are doing in conjunction with the doctors. We are not just building. We actually have meetings with doctors to say, you for an MR scan to work, what is it that you require in terms of other support? So these are integrated here. So, Honorable Chairperson, this is all what we can say now.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the presentation. That brings to an end the presentation for today. Just to emphasize...
Chairperson, there is one question I forgot to mention. The non-payment of contractors, these are the contractors who maintain the current hospital equipment, boilers and so on. That is where some of the outsourcing happens. The minister has actually directed January this year to say we must take over that function as well of maintenance of the main equipment, because she sees that it is a problem. So that issue we are also going to be addressing. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, General. That just to emphasize what Honorable Skosana was saying, what he's saying is touching on the nature of this committee. The nature of this committee is not to reduce our oversight role to policy. We always want to interact with you, as you have realized from what the honorable members are saying. We'll ask you questions, we'll ask clarities, we'll give you suggestions, we'll also instruct you to certain things, to do certain things, because we cannot debate the matter of sound financial management, because it's in the legislation already. We will always instruct you that we do not want irregular expenditure, we do not want fruitless expenditure. That is the nature, that is our approach in this committee. And when you have done well, we'll tell you we have done well. Now, what we'll say to you and encourage you to you, whenever you come to this committee, you must make sure that you have all your facts correctly. Do not fear where you failed, and do not be shy to praise yourself when you have done well. That is how we are going to interact with you. In terms of outsourcing, honorable members, we must say that if you have to outsource, it should be in terms of efficiency and cost saving. and efficiency in terms of performance. I think that all should be the basis of outsourcing. If any other thing comes, as you said, General Ramzwat, that there are exceptional cases, we should know. And what makes those cases exceptional? And also, in terms of empowering the historical disadvantage, that I think is policy already. Thank you very much. I don't want you to move now. I want us to continue and finish our three items, honorable members. This is for information. I'll start it from the bottom. The Armed Forces Day. I'm sure honorable members have received an invitation. Those members who are interested in going to witness this noble activity, please communicate with the Secretary Mendy here. We are supposed to go to Cuba.
Just on that first one, can I just inquire, will it be the committee and the mid-committee carry the cost of, or must we each fly on our own?
It's not from your pocket. It's on the committee cost. The committee will carry the cost. Thank you very much.
Sorry for asking, just to make sure about that, because the next day is budget in Parliament, so we will probably have to fly back on the Monday and come back on the Tuesday afternoon. Is that correct?
No, the budget will be on Wednesday. What time?
Yeah.
2 o'clock. We'll
yeah,
be
yeah.
back. It
doesn't yeah.
matter. Even if you leave Durban in the morning, we'll
okay.
still make it.
Okay.
So they are going to book you in accordance with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then you must
Thank
also,
you.
Of course,
indicate
what will be your needs.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Marie. And the Cuban trip, we were supposed to go to Cuba at the end of January, and then it has been shifted. We can do it between end of March and the end of April. So what I suggested to the secretary is that they must look at a period, because I know that at a certain period in the constituency with school holidays, honorable members would like to spend school holidays with their children. So we must look at an opening during that time, and then we can then take our trip to Cuba. Honorable Marin.
Chairperson, just the other thing that we must keep in mind, I'm not quite sure how the program will be for budget debates, individual budget debates. I know last year we were quite busy in April, so if you can, April, May, if you can just keep that in mind. But can you maybe share with us the reason why this has been moved from end of January to March or April? Because I mean, we were all waiting for confirmations and then didn't got, and then eventually just got the note that it's been postponed.
No. That is what I wanted to know. Subsequently, when I heard that it has been postponed, I requested a meeting with the chair of chairs on that matter. I'm still going to see the chair of chairs on that matter as to what was the reason. But he also found and indicated that we are supposed to do the time frame, something like that, the time frame. But I don't have the details. What I said to him is that I'm coming because I need to get a full explanation, though that the committee must know that. We'll do that and we'll come and give you feedback. Thank you, Honorable Marie. Honorable Gamet.
Thanks, Chair. I'm not sure whether you say you're confirming either March or April. I would propose end of March, because April will be another financial year. It might stand in the way of other things to do.
It's fine, Honorable Gamet. We'll look at what is doable.
during that period. Let's look at what is doable during that period. Honorable General, you wanted to give us some information?
No, Chair, I was not sure if we must continue staying because now it is internal. Okay.
I said you must stay.
Okay, there is no
committee is an open it's an open forum for everybody. So because if I allow you to go now, you are going to disturb the general is battle prepared now. That's honorable members, that we'll deal with this matter. And then I'll give you feedback from time to time. And then, do we have any amendment on the minutes? You move for the adoption. Thank you, Honorable Isau. Seconder. Honorable Bongo, thank you very much. The meeting.
The Honorable Chair, I have contacted you during the last 2 weeks. It has come to my attention about silver mines and the cables that's being stolen and also antenna being vandalized, and the request for the committee to pay urgent attention and if we could pay a visit as soon as possible, because two of our vessels are actually at sea as well, and communication is essential, and Simonstown is the key place for that.
Thank you very much for reminding me. Indeed, Honorable Isau phoned me about that matter. That I think, Honorable Members, there's nothing wrong with our visit to Silver Mines is long overdue. We haven't been there. We will just try to factor it in our next oversight. It's not far, it's at Simonstown. We can do it in an hour, in a day. We'll look into that. Are we done, Honorable Members? Any other thing? Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Can we request, Chair, that we be provided with the names of members of the committee who will be attending the Armed Forces Day, because we want to make proper arrangements, and this is now the last week for the...
Be done, General. Thank you very much.